Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages. I am the F4L icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, and today we're going to have a special episode as Halloween quickly approaches. Momentarily, I'm going to be joined by the undefeated Dream Warriors, Women Warriors Wrestling Champion, Social Telenet Champion, I should say, the Duchess Lana King, who her and I are going to be telling some true real-life ghost stories from our experiences and whatnot. Seeing how it's Halloween and all, I figured what better way to celebrate the holiday? You know, there's all these, you know, kinds of stories out there, and you hear all kinds of various different things. So I figured, why not just kind of share some real-life ghost stories? So today, that's what we're going to do. And the Duchess will, and Lana will tell us about kind of her experiences where she works with, with things that, like the things that go bump in the night, so to speak. And, or not so much with that, but she works at a place that is said to be haunted. And we're going to be, exchanging notes on places that are legitimately haunted. And also some of the folklore and some of our favorite holiday tales and legends of our areas. That fit into the Halloween tropes and the holiday spirit of Halloween and the spirits of what have you. Should be fun. And momentarily she'll be joining. And it's always good to have the Duchess on with us. She's always a joy and she's always fun. So we're just waiting for her to come on board. Hopefully we have the same time zone. This is also fun, I believe. And she's coming all the way from Canada. So this is probably one of our furthest people to come and join us on the hall and the F4L headquarters, coming all the way from Canada to join us. And should be very, very fun. So waiting, and we'll be good. Hope you guys are all doing well. It's been an interesting October. Those of you people know I don't like October. It's not been a fun October. But I'm making it through like I always do. So October is not something that's going to go away anytime soon. It's on a calendar, and I've been dealing with it for many years. So I'm quite used to the month of October. Lana's going to be joining us a little bit after 4, just because I wanted time to introduce her and let you guys know what we're going to be doing here today. So just waiting momentarily, and she's a spot-on guest. And she's one of the coolest people, I have to say, that we've had on our show. She's very, very, very well, very great, vast of knowledge, and she has a fantastic demeanor about her. She's really cool people, and we're honored to have her on our roster because she has been part of the women's division on our show for quite a while now, and we are proud to have her. She's a great addition, and we met through another mutual friend and a even bigger name than me. He's a really cool dude, and shout out to Michael Fishman. I hope he's doing well, and everyone who has been part of the things and so forth. Michael Fishman isn't one of the coolest people, one of the most down-to-earth, one of the most realistic people you'll ever meet. And I highly recommend anyone who has the opportunity to, grab his ear or, give an ear or whatever to, listen to Michael Fishman. He's got a great mind. He's been in the industry for a long time in the entertainment world, but he's been all over the place, and he's held multiple different positions and multiple different things. I think he's one of the most humble and most realistic people and one heck of a family man. And as you know, I am prone for people who are family people. I am a family person myself, so I highly respect Michael Fishman and all he does. So we are waiting for Miss Lana, and she'll be joining us momentarily. And it's always good, like I said, to have her on. And she is, like I said, our women's undefeated champion on the Dream Warriors side of our show. So we're waiting on her, and, you know, it's going to be a good time, I think. So we're just doing things. I'm just going to hold you guys here momentarily while she gets ready to come on board. So, anywho, I'm curious what other people have for experiences. Speaking of which, hello, welcome to the FRL headquarters. This is the FRL icon, Sean Jazz Stevens. Is this Miss Lana?
That's me.
Can you hear me well?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can. Fantastic. It's, you know, this is like the third show I've done that there's been no technical issues whenever I've had a guest on. You must be good luck.
Don't jinx it now.
Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm, you know, doing my normal October thing, as you probably remember. So I'm just kind of doing that. And, you know, but, you know, I keep myself busy, and I keep myself focused on various other things.
Yeah.
And you know what? All honesty, if it wasn't for the people, you know, who, you know, they know kind of how it goes and stuff like that. My family is wicked awesome about it. Well, my wife and my kids, to be specific. And, you know, and, you know, my F4L out there, they've been really helpful. But, you know, the month's almost over. You know what I mean? So it's a good thing.
Oh, I know. I don't even believe it.
I'll tell you, time flies. You know, it just seems like the year just got here, and here's this month. We're almost over with October. It's almost
almost Christmas.
I know. It is almost the holiday. It's almost Christmas, and Thanksgiving's before that. I don't know if you guys – you don't celebrate Thanksgiving up there in Canada, right?
Canadians do. They do it in October. So it's the first week of October.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Well, first and foremost, just to remind people, this, ladies and gentlemen, is our good friend, Miss Lana King. Lana, want to tell, you know, introduce yourself to the people who lived under a rock who might not know who you are?
Oh, okay. I'm the champion of this Friends for Life wrestling match. I'm just an actor in Toronto, basically. That's all I am. And I work at a theater. I work for a ballet. So it's like I'm pretty artsy.
Excellent. And, you know, that's perfectly fine. I think people, once you said you're the women's champion, I think everyone knew because everyone's pretty familiar with you from our shows. Undefeated for almost 3 years. That's unheard of.
Has it really been 3 years?
I think so. I went back to see your debut, and I believe it was 2000 when I put you on the roster originally. And we're in 2023 now, I think. And not lost the match yet. And you're the women's Telenet champion. You won that, and no one's been able to take it from you because, well, you're undefeated. So that's kind of why. Yeah, they can't.
I still
feel
like it'll be a very, very sad day, the day someone beats me.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because it's
going to be a sad.
You know, I have to be honest with you. I've seen the people that you've been in the ring with already. I honestly don't know who that could even possibly be. You've beaten people from the UFC. You've beaten horror legends. You've beaten fellow actresses. You've beaten music celebrities. You've beaten YouTube celebrities. I mean, you even beat that angry Karen woman.
I know. It's insane. I mean, it's so much fun to watch it.
Right, isn't it? You know, pretty soon we're going to have to do a two-on-one.
It's just that thing that I can't do.
It is. It's what I can't do. That's right. That's what I can't do. That's right. So I was telling people today we're going to have a little bit of a fun show as we're going to be telling some realistic Halloween and ghost stories and traditional, folk tales or whatever. I can't wait because what we're going to do is we're going to kind of, you know, exchange notes, so to speak, and talk about these things that, you know, other people have tried and other people have all kinds of things to say. But I mean, I can tell you specifically what experiences I've had. Then you can tell people yours as well. And I can tell you what it's like to really be clairvoyant, which is not a lot of fun as much as people think it is. So, you know, let's take things first. Since you're the guest, why don't you start off with telling us one of your stories that you have?
Oh, I have so many. The one I tell everyone all the time, which is like a real big winner when I work at the Elgin and people ask me for ghost stories. Basically, I was on set at the Elgin. I was there at 6 in the morning, so I was the first one inside waiting for this film crew to come. So I knew I was by myself because obviously, like, I was the only one there. And I just sat around just, like, waiting and waiting and waiting, and I just started hearing, like, this tap, 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 like, footsteps upstairs in the balcony level of the theater. I'm like, oh, the film crew's here. I'll go up and see them. Went upstairs, looked around, literally no one around me, and I'm like, okay. Went down to the orchestra level, sat down, went on my phone, did a few little things, looked at the stage, and then it happened again. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, what is going on? Who is upstairs? So then I go upstairs again, literally no one there, but because the theater is 109 years old, so everything's pretty much creaky and spooky, and you can hear every movement. The chair decided to make that very distinct chair, like from someone sitting down to standing up. And I was like, okay, I'm good. I'm gonna go way outside. You enjoy the view.
That's awesome. So now,
and I was just
when
like,
you
that's.
That's awesome. That's funny so far. Continue. That's awesome.
Okay. Yeah, no, I was just like, okay, you take it. I'm going to go outside. You play. Enjoy. And then I said to my person who finally stand up, I was like, do you want to go inside the theater for the shift? Because I want to stay outside for the minute.
That's awesome. You know what's funny is that response right there is exactly what anybody who is kind of what a rational person would do in that situation. And what I find funny, I don't know about you, but you know these TV shows on television who claim to be ghost hunters, who claim to be paranormal, but since their debut, they've been shown to use parlor tricks and so forth. You're aware of these shows, right, up there in Canada?
Yeah. I know that. I kind of still love Ghost Hunters on, I think it's a Sci-Fi channel now, or A&E, I think it is.
Yeah, I think it used to be on the Sci-Fi, and Ghost Hunters actually, their headquarters, TAPS, is right not too far away from where we just moved.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
Right.
But what's interesting is these guys are supposed to be ghost hunters, and the purpose of these guys are supposed to be looking for ghosts, right? But yet, whenever they hear a noise,
everything, right?
Yeah, supposedly they debunk it, but the problem is with the show is since its arrival and since it's been, you know, debuted, people have since come forward with some parlor tricks that they've used on the show. And it's been since outed for being maybe not.
I don't want to read that because it would ruin the illusion for me, I think.
Yeah, it would be, right? So we'll just continue letting them do that. But for the time being, you would think that these guys who are looking for ghosts would probably be more like, okay, good, it's a ghost. Let's talk to it. But when you watch those shows, they get freaked out over every little noise they hear. And you got to wonder, if a ghost was to appear in front of them, what would their real reaction be? Because their idea is to look for ghosts, right? What happened if Casper was to come out and say, hey, ghost hunters, here I am. You know what I mean? I mean, you watch them on these shows and they're like, they're supposed to be looking for ghosts. That's their idea. That's what their purpose is.
It's funny, one of my dreams is to, like, go through the Elgin at night because it is one of the most haunted places in Ontario and just, like, go there and just see what happens when we're all not there. Because we find that there's certain ghosts that are very active during certain performances.
Oh, really?
Like, the Lavender Lady. Yeah, like, the Lavender Lady, which is, I'll tell you the history of the Lavender Lady.
I can't wait.
So, in 1913, or in, I think it's like 1914, I think it was, when the theater was open to like the opera and the vaudeville and all that stuff. So the theater has two floors. So we have one on the top and one on the bottom. The one on the top used to host like all the artistic shows, like the opera, movies like that. And the one below us was more like grand. So anyways, what happened was she was in the top level of the theater in the balcony box L, And she, unfortunately, was stabbed in the bathroom, which is right opposite the elevators. Now, these elevators are manually operated. So you need to have someone in the elevator, which is what we're trained for, to use them.
Right.
So what happened was she crawled across the floor, pulled the elevator, and unfortunately, by the time that the elevator had gotten to her floor, she unfortunately had passed away.
Oh, man.
So she lives in the theater, but she only ever comes out during the opera and during the film festival.
Interesting.
Anytime before that, no one really reports any kind of like lavender smell, which is why she's called the Lavender Lady, because you can always smell the lavender around you. You're like, okay, that seemed to be her. No one ever hears anything up in the balcony, in the box. No one ever like says anything unless it's a film festival and unless it's the opera.
Interesting. Well, isn't it, you know, what's interesting about that is there's a lot of those kinds of stories about these, you know, these, because a lot of the times they call them residual hauntings.
Yeah.
People who have kind of the same kind of ritual over and over again, and even after death, they can't stop doing whatever it is they were doing beforehand.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes people who are very comfortable in one area, much like, you know, you're the Lavender Lady, or for example, the Lady in Black over in up my neck of the woods, who is over there in on Thompson's Island, and a few others, various, that kind of dwell. You know, a lot of those have the same kind of in a scenario, in the same situation where you'll...
Yeah.
You can't stop something like that, which is interesting because, you know, just have the sensation of lavender in an area that probably is old, and I have to say, being an old kid, I would say it probably is a musty smell, wouldn't it, normally?
Yeah, that's
or like
that's
a damp kind
fair.
Of a smell.
That's fairly fair to say. Yeah,
I mean,
that's pretty
like,
fair to say. It is something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they do an upkeep on it and stuff like that, because there's a lot of films and things like that that film up there, right? Like, what was the most recent project up there that you know
of? Oh, my God. Nightmare Alley was done last year. We did that last year.
Oh, okay. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's the most recent one, because we've only just started opening up two movies. I'm doing a movie shoot right now, actually, there.
Oh.
Which I can't assume. I'm not allowed to tell you what it is, but I'll tell you eventually.
That's okay. We look forward.
Yeah,
you're going to have to come back and tell us later, though.
Yeah, so that's happening now. And then, every now and then, there's a lot of, like, there's been The Shape of Water was filmed there. We had Chicago filmed there.
Mm-hmm.
M. Night Shyamalan, yeah. And then, just so many, but it's more known for like the film festival because it's double layered. So there's two theaters. It's like the VIP theater of like the goal where all the premieres are happening. So it's pretty big for that. So yes, it is up kept really well. But you're right; it does have a little musky smell to it, a little old smell.
I feel like that's that history though. I think a lot of like the older locations, like you mentioned, it was like 100 plus years old. The building you said. I find a lot of those buildings, as much as you can, so as much as you can clean those buildings, they're still going to have that old kind of traditional smells. We have a lot of historical buildings.
It's been updated since the 80s, but.
Sure, absolutely. So that's a lot of fun. So now, how often do you guys get reports from people on set or whatever? Like, are these kind of common things you guys are used to hearing? Like, oh, it's just that Lavender Lady again, or?
All the time. Like, it's really funny because we were filming something and it was a nighttime shoot again. And I'm sitting, like, manning my area, and then someone came up to me and said, is there a child on set? And I'm like, I wouldn't want a child to be on set, but what do you mean?
Right.
And she was like, because we hear a child laughing. And I'm like, oh, that's a little boy, that's Sam. And she's like, what do you mean that's Sam? And I said, well, Sam's a little boy that unfortunately fell over the balcony, which is why we have bars now. And he obviously, he's still there. Yeah.
Right.
So he just plays, he just runs up and down the theater. You can always hear him. He's always laughing. He's always throwing a ball. And people just said, like, oh, okay, we thought it was a little boy. Now we're afraid.
You know, You know what's funny about that, though? Now, let me ask you this. That first encounter, obviously, it rattled you and stuff like that, right? How used to it are you right now? And, like, right now, is it like, oh, it's just that lavender lady. Oh, it's just that so-and-so right now. Like, it's no surprise anymore to you. Did that take you a little while to get over, or are you still getting spooked out by the things?
Oh, no. I mean, every now and then things happen because you forget, but it's more like because I never, ever, ever feel like it's like an evil haunt. It's like it's just, they're very nice. Like, I never feel like I'm going to get hurt or anything like that, I guess.
Right.
So we always just treat it like it's, we give it them the respect they deserve. It's their theater, too. Mm-hmm. We always, whenever the lavender lady calls us up randomly to the sixth floor, we always open it and we treat her, bring her down, and we give her like the Elgin treatment. Now I just talk to them every now and then. So if I'm doing my checks, like my pre-checks before a show, Sam, I'm like, okay, Sam, the show's starting soon. Either you take your seat or go away. Like, you know, you just have conversations.
Now, that's understandable. You know what, though? That's also smart, too, because when you acknowledge them, it makes them feel more at ease. And one of the things I think that people kind of forget is these are people who were people at one point. These are spirits of people who were once living, and they have a history of their own, and they have a lineage and stuff. And like anyone else, you wouldn't want to be ignored by someone
exactly,
else.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel a lot of the times when these supposed, like the hauntings and stuff, I think hauntings is just a, I don't know if I agree with the word haunting. I wish there's a better term, because I feel like that's
I feel like that's
a negative term, because I don't feel like
it's
really all that negative, because I mean, yeah, if you watch the movie versions of these hauntings and stuff, yeah, sure. But that's Hollywood stuff or
But that's the dramatic effect. That's like drama, isn't it, really?
Exactly. And when you really break away all of the folklore and all of the kind of illusions and all of the, you know, Hollywood special effects, I'm using Hollywood as a, you know, broad term. Because
example. Yeah.
Hocus pocus kind of a thing. But in retrospect, it's really not like, you know, what the actual experience is when you have a quote, you know, a presence living or sharing a dwelling. Because for the most part, when I was younger, here comes one of my early ones. When I was younger, I've always had this kind of a connection with everyone, really, but everything as well. Very sensitive to various different people and things and feelings and emotions. My wife says I'm empathic, which is cool.
I can see that. Empathy and empathy.
She says I'm an empath, and my wife is, you know, someone who believes in a lot of the supernatural as well, and she, you know, practices, mm-hmm. you know, natural, different natural types of things that are, you know, it's not Hollywood stuff, but the actual, you know, religion. Mm-hmm. But anywho, so she's very, you know, familiar with those things. But when I was growing up, I didn't have a lot of people I could talk to about those things, but people knew. Like my mother knew, my grandmother actually knew. And what's funny is when you have to do research, right? For me, myself, I had to find out, where does this come from? Why do I have these things happening to me?
Yeah.
And when I when I finally had to ask someone, because my blood family, you know, the one I was born into, they're very secretive individuals. So trying to get a straight answer out of anyone is very tough. And there's only few and far between people.
Have you ever, like, had a conversation with someone about being a highly sensitive person?
Yes.
I've been told I'm that, which is which is a variation of the empath, right, really?
Well, I'm also clairvoyant, which is also something that I finally had to figure out for myself, because I didn't know what was going on and why these things were happening, and I didn't understand. Because a lot of different variations of that is there's even people who have their own podcasts, and I'm like, really? And because I've had it since I was very young. And when I was 18,
yeah.
I actually, when my first bout with cancer, I, you know, after I, you know, died for that short amount of time on the operating table, it was even stronger after that. It was even stronger after that. And then it was, you know, more, you know, clearance, if you would. But, you know, when I did my research, I had my, I asked my aunt, who at that point was the oldest living person I had, and it comes to find out that a lot of people on my grandmother's side of things, they all talked about having the ability to talk to spirits, to see spirits, to, you know, deal with them, and they're drawn to them, which was interesting to hear because I never heard any of that growing up. I always just thought I was just the oddball out, so to speak. But,
yeah,
you know, this is now, granted, this is the same aunt. My this aunt was on what was called the Castle Island Committee. Now, my aunt was huge into the historical societies and so forth, and she was one of the people who was kind of part of the Castle Island Committee. Castle Island is a national landmark up in Boston, and it's, the actual term is Fort Independence. That's where the fort was. And it's actually the same place where writer Edgar Allan Poe was stationed. I'm sure you've heard of Edgar Allan Poe. Edgar Allan Poe was stationed there as a cadet way back in the day. And he had heard a story from the other people there, the other, you know, people he served with, about, you know, a guy who got everyone so angry that they got him drunk and buried him in a wall. And then he wrote a story about it based on, he wrote a story about that very incident called The Cast in Montelio, I believe it's called, one of Edgar Allan Poe's well-known short stories. And that's actually based on a true story that happened at Castle Island or Fort Independence. But what's interesting is you would think that building would be haunted, Castle Island, because a guy was buried in the wall.
Is it not?
You know what? My aunt used to let me stay over there overnight when I was younger because she was on the committee. And, you know, I'll tell you, there's something about being, you know, 12 or 13, being able to stay in a old fort by yourself overnight with your friend. And there's something like freeing about that. It's really cool. But in the same sense, it's like, oh, it's just us here. And, you know, you know, it's cool on one hand. And on the other hand, it's like, oh, this is interesting. But
did you ever experience anything while you were there?
At Fort Independence, no. But over across the way from Fort Independence, there is the other fort that it was that is kind of built similar to that, and it's actually right across from an island called Thompson Island. And that's right across from Castle Island. There's another fort over there, and that is where the famed Woman in Black is stationed, or where she resides.
That's a good
story,
movie, by the way.
A woman in, it's not that Woman in Black. The Woman in Black, I don't know where that movie Woman in Black with Daniel Radcliffe is not what this thing is about. The story of the Woman in Black was she was a widow of a, she was supposed to get married to one of the soldiers back when it was a fort, and he never came home. And so he was killed at sea, and so he never came home. So because he never came home to her, and she was supposed to be wedded to him, she ended up taking her life because she got so depressed about him not showing up, and she was in her, you know, her black gown that she, because she was mourning, she saw herself as a widow because he never came home, and that's the famed Woman in Black that you hear about over there on the island. And that one, we have had a couple of different things. See, being clairvoyant, it's not like, you know, what everyone else experiences. My friend is not clairvoyant. Yeah. He can't see or communicate like I can. He can feel them, because like anybody can feel the gust of wind, and they can feel the kind of anxiousness sometimes. But I can...
Yeah, but like, isn't that like... copper or something?
Yeah, it can
when you have high aluminium things wherever you are that causes anxiousness. Something with the ions and something like that.
Well, they have high EMFs and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of energy and things like that. But As far as, you know, I'm just able to, you know, do those things, unfortunately, or fortunately.
Well, no, I totally understand. I totally believe you.
Where he can feel them, I can see them. And, you know, so most of the time, whenever something is legitimately haunted, I will be one of the first people to know, because they'll make their presence known to me first, because they always seem to just know who they can and cannot communicate with. It's a very interesting thing.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Like, I mean, I definitely understand that.
And being who I am, even at that age, you know, I could see the pain on her. I could feel her sadness, and I felt bad for her. You know, that's a horrible story. And, you know, but like what you do at your theater, whenever I would go over there, I would, you know, and I would, you know, either see
just
or
give
feel
her,
her.
Just give her respect.
I give her the respect, and I acknowledge her. And I say, I hope you're having a better day, my miss, whatever the case may be. I try to teach in that old English, because that's what they kind of know. And some older people, that's what they have, which is another interesting thing that, you know, people don't get with that whole clairvoyant thing, like, or being able to communicate.
Yeah, but
them.
I mean, I've definitely learned a lot from it, though, because I've always believed it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, I just never really like been anywhere that's like fully haunted like the Elgin. But I honestly, like, I don't feel any kind of like bad energy when I'm there. Like, I definitely would love to go in the nighttime while we're not there, when we're sleeping, and just like see what happens.
The
when the whole thing
hour?
Is dark, completely dark. Yeah, like,
you know,
3 a.m.
Can I tell you something funny about that, which is awesome? And I get that. That's awesome. This is awesome, but this is also a fun thing. So a lot of people believe that hauntings only happen at night, but the reality is, it depends on what kind of a haunting you have and where you are. Like, when we talk about those residual hauntings, like the ones that keep going over and over again, sometimes you'll have something that happened like midday or early in the morning or something like that, where it only happened during those times periods. And then the rest of the day, you won't feel or see or anything else during the whole rest of the day. So, you know,
yeah,
and then there are others who come out at night.
You're just more aware. You're just more alert at night.
I think you are. You know why else? Is because you become even more hypervigilant at night, because your senses are even more high. Your ears and your body is more accessible at night, because at nighttime, people are more relaxed, supposedly. They can be more relaxed, and they're more apt to have had, you know, be dealt with their day already. So they're more apt to doing and feeling those things. So definitely. So the Lavender Lady, now let me ask you this, the Lavender Lady and the little boy ghost, do you know if they ever have interacted, what the history is between the two, and is there any history of them going together?
Mm. Well, the little boy died in, like, the early 40s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lavender Lady died in 1914, roughly.
So she's older.
So I have never... Yeah, she was the first one. I mean, so many people, like, have said, like, the folklore of it is that, oh, someone died in the concrete of the building. And I'm like, and it's never been proven.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that, but I mean,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if they've ever been together, but I usually either get one or the other, and I always know like which one's probably more likely going to happen, because like I said, the Lavender Lady only comes out during the opera. Like, people start
mm-hmm.
saying that they can smell the lavender during opera, but
okay.
I mean, you
that
see, but
sense.
You're going up, but being but being called up to the top floor when there's no shows is definitely still a residual. Visual hunt?
Yeah, I would think
so.
Especially if it's the same time every single night.
It's not the same time. It's like, it's just like random moments. Like, whenever there's no shows happening on the top floor, top theater, we're just always called up there, and it's always the same elevator.
That's awesome. Now, here's another funny one. So my wife and I, when we were still dating and stuff like that, we were just getting set up or whatever. Like that, and we decided we were going to, you know, obviously the kids are older or whatever, we decided to have a date night, and my wife had booked a hotel in Boston. She didn't tell me where it was or anything like that, But she had booked a hotel, and my job was to, you know, kind of, you know, fill in the blanks of what we do kind of here and there. And we did a, you know, for fun, we did one of those Boston ghost tours, which are always fun. You know, you want to hear about history. A lot of places do have these kinds of things. I highly recommend.
I want to go to Boston so bad.
At the very least, what those tours are a great history lesson. I love history. I'm a geek, I guess you'd say. I like learning about the past and things like that. And I'm also a nature person. Like in a couple of days down at the Slater Mill, which is also supposed to be one of the most haunted areas of all of my area, they're having a bat watching or a bat exhibit where they're going to be doing bat watching and having a thing about bats. Bats are my favorite animal, by the way, which probably not share with anybody else. Most people don't like bats. I give all those things more of a chance than everybody else does. But my wife, anyway.
I love history. I love history.
Oh, it's fantastic. And, you know, I always feel like whenever you're in an area, you should always, you know, do one of these tours. If not necessarily a ghost tour if you're not into those kinds of things, but there's always some type of thing to learn about where you're from and, you know, learn about the area. I always find those are important. But I had done a ghost tour, one of these ghost things prior. It wasn't the same one I got, but my wife got this hotel, and she didn't tell me where it was yet, but she told me where it was. I said, wait a minute, isn't that the Omni Hotel, I said to her? And she said, I don't know. Now, fun fact about the Parker Omni Hotel in Boston, it is probably more famous in the most haunted hotel of all of Boston.
I had
learned of this hotel from the ghost tour I did prior to that, because the true story about the Omni Hotel is, not just the true story, but fact of the matter is the Stephen King short story, 1408. There was a movie too. John Cusack was in the movie. That was actually based on a room at the Omni Hotel. And when my wife said she booked the hotel in Boston, I said, that's not the Omni Hotel, is it? Because, you know, that's a haunted hotel. She said, oh, no, it can't be the same one. So needless to say, we get to the hotel, and don't you know, it is indeed the Omni Hotel that she booked. And I said, what floor did you book, honey? And needless to say, yeah, it was a 14th floor. And, of course, because 14s are lucky numbers. Anyway, here's the fun part. So my wife still didn't believe me when I told her this is the most haunted hotel in Boston. And she didn't believe me at that time. So we go up to the desk, and I asked the person, I said, listen, I don't want to be one of those people, but is this not the haunted Omni Hotel? Now, get this. They gave us a little sheet, sheet prepared of all of the things that you can probably experience in the hotel as a kind of FYI in case you have to worry about these things. And I kid you not, there was a whole sheet of things that you could were probably going to happen in the hotel. Mm-hmm. These are things that things that people have experienced, things that people have, you know, reported. And now my wife believes me because, you know, they confirmed it was in fact the hotel that I talked to her. I told her it was haunted. So we stayed up on the 14th floor, which is the haunted floor in the hotel. And what's funny is when we got in, one of the things, we didn't look at the sheet yet, but when we took the elevator, one of the elevators, we took it up to our floor and it stopped randomly at one of the floors. We weren't paying much attention. We got up to the room and we looked on the form, because when we stopped at that floor, no one got on or off. No one pushed the button. It just stopped randomly at this one floor. The door opened, nothing happened, and it kept going. So we didn't know anything about, we didn't look at the form yet. We got up to the top of, we got to our room, we looked. Turns out one of the things that people report is on one of the floors, in fact, they're reported that it randomly stops at this floor where reportedly that's a realistic thing that does in fact happen. That was the first thing we encountered.
That's people messing with you.
You would think, right? It could be, right?
Oh, but I feel like it's the hotel staff just like saying, we have someone going up, test the floor.
Yeah, you know, that, you know, I almost think that that might have been a thing if it wasn't for the fact that there was literally no signs of anyone there and there was no rooms nearby. Because I thought of that too.
So what if
someone
was weird?
Yeah, it was interesting. But then, you know, other things would continue. Like, you know, there are other reports. I don't know if you knew this, but you've heard of the famed author Charles Dickens, correct?
Of course.
Charles Dickens actually wrote several things at the Omni Hotel. And he used to practice things in front of this one mirror at the Omni Hotel. So go figure. One of the things that they have is the actual mirror where he would perform in front of at the Omni Hotel, Charles Dickens.
Right. Yeah.
And, I didn't get to see Charles Dickens, for the record, as much as I probably would have.
But that would have been pretty cool if you did, though, right?
I would have loved to have talked to Charles Dickens. I'm sure he would have been a fantastic person to, you know, communicate with. But I can tell you I've had to deal with several others while I was there because, like I said before, when you're clairvoyant...
You're not making me want to go to this hotel.
Oh, no. You should go to this hotel. It's fun to do. Boston is a fun place to go in general when you want this kinds of things because it's very rich in history. And
For sure. Like,
because of the lineage of Boston, because of all of the folklore surrounds everything, and because of all of the things that have happened in Boston, there are a lot of various
mm-hmm.
different things that surround it. I didn't realize
Salem,
of course, is one of the most well-known areas. That's just north of Boston, Salem. Fun fact, because you work in film, I'm sure you know this, some fun trivia and whatnot, but I don't know if you saw the Hocus Pocus 2 movie that just came out on Disney Plus.
Oh, yeah, of course I saw that.
Spoiler alert, none of it was filmed in Salem, Mass.
I know, I heard that too. I saw it on TikTok and I was like, what the hell? Why would you not even
spoiler
alert, in Salem?
But spoiler alert, I was the one who found all the locations. It was down in Rhode Island, just south of Salem.
Oh.
So I don't actually, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know why they had an issue because part of what I had to do with part of the things I do for some of the film things
probably,
that come through.
Probably some kind of a copyright issue, you know?
Yeah, and also the other thing about Salem is a lot of people don't, you know, understand. I think people could understand it. But what happens is in Salem is because of the history of Salem, because of the fact that it's so rich in the folklore, in the myths, and the different history behind it, it's a very, very hot spot to tourism. And so much so
of
that
course,
it congests their city and it takes over their city. So, for example, like on Halloween around here, a lot of people go to Salem for Halloween because it's Halloween and it's Salem.
Oh, that'd be so good.
And for the most part, a lot of people, that's part of their Halloween traditions to go to Salem. But, like, and Salem knows that and they recognize that. But what they do is now they tell people, listen, you can come to our city, just leave your cars at home. Because what happens is everyone just comes in there from all over the place, parks wherever they can. And the people who live in Salem have to go around all of these
anywhere.
People
yeah.
to park where they live. So they told people to take the train in, which is very much accessible, which is
and
also
eco-friendly.
It's also eco-friendly too. And you know, the one thing about Boston I can say is that when it comes to getting around places, it's just easy to get around. You can get off at one spot and literally do the walk around and not feel like you walked anywhere. But in fact, covered miles of history.
Right,
it's interesting like that.
It's definitely on my list of places I want to go to.
Well, if you ever come to Boston, let me know, and we will probably give you the tour ourselves. I've done some of those tours so many times, I probably can do them myself. I was actually, before I went back to work over at the wrestling show, I was actually contemplating becoming like a historian because I think it's important
to
teach
people.
That
would have been good
for you. Yeah, it would have been something different too, which I'm always
meet people all the time.
Challenges. And I love teaching. I love educating people. I love, you know, teaching the, you know, truth stories versus the, you know, the other things. And you kind of have to have a personality too. which
exactly. Right.
I
have extremely boring
personality, I suppose. Yeah, it's
kind
of
interesting. You do.
But no, it's a lot of fun and it's a good time. But unfortunately,
there's definitely on my list for Salem, though.
Well, you let me know, and I will.
Like,
take
I really
want to
go. I really want to go to Salem.
Absolutely. And by the way, let me tell you, want me to tell you why my wife booked the hotel?
Why? Okay.
Can you guess why my wife picked that specific hotel? Because she specifically looked for that hotel. There's a specific reason. Do you know what it is?
Let's see what I would know about your wife. Would it be for the mimosa bar?
You're close. You're very close. She,
that's literally
my
wife, what I would pick it for.
My wife is huge on food. She loves the Food Network. She loves cooking. She loves, you know, all that stuff. And the reason why she wanted to go to the Omni Hotel is the very first place, it's the birthplace of the, quote, Boston cream pie.
Oh,
it is where the dessert Boston cream comes from, was first made at the Park Hotel in their restaurant. That's the first place where the Boston cream pie came from. So because she's a foodie, she wanted to stay with the home of the original Boston cream pie. And that is why we stayed at the Omni Hotel.
That's a very, very good region.
Yeah. And then I said,
well,
yeah, it is a great place for food. It's also where the ghosts like to hang out, too.
Yeah. No,
so that was, it's fun like that. Yeah. It's cool.
The Pinky Bell.
Exactly. So you have the, let me ask you this now, dealing with the Lavender Lady and the boy, are there any other like stories you have about that area can share?
About the theater or about the area, or about like the area?
Well,
like
what
Toronto.
You've encountered or anything like Toronto, whatever the case may be. I mean, I've never been to Toronto, so it's a memory lesson to me. I've told you all about Boston.
I mean, to be honest, I never really experienced anything until I kind of got here. But I mean, I've never really been anywhere that's been super active. I mean, of all the haunted places in Canada, I think that's only the one I know of, really. But I mean, there's a couple of haunted, haunted places in like theaters in London too.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also like a lot of them have been torn down and rebuilt, so you can't really feel anything anymore. What else
mm-hmm.
I think of?
Now, you originally came from over the UK, correct? Didn't you come from the UK into Canada? So do you have any stories from over there at all? Do you remember anything from over in the UK? Because, I mean, there's a lot of history over there, I've heard, too. My grandma used to tell stories.
Yeah,
she was from Ireland, so...
There's a lot of story. I mean, England is a very, very historical place.
It sure is.
But I don't
is.
Think I ever really experienced anything like paranormal until I got here. So
I see.
It could have happened and I just didn't know about it. But I mean, I've never had something so consistent as Sam annoying me during every single film shoot. And I'm just like, Sam, go away.
He must like you then. He was drawn to you. No, all honestly,
well,
when
exactly.
it comes to little kid
like
ghosts, they do tend
like
to. Yeah.
Be playful, right? He knows I'll play with him. He knows I'll yell at him.
Exactly.
He knows that I'll come and like stop it. So that's too. What else has really happened this week? I mean, I heard a lot of stories from people who I work with. All had completely different situations happen, but all kind of the same. Like we've all had our name called as we were going down
mm-hmm.
the stairs, which has always been really weird. Because
by the same person,
we don't know if it's by the same person, but all the experiences are pretty much like word for word the same.
Yeah, that's all. I often said that,
and we only found out when we started talking about it. Like when we started
mm-hmm.
talking about it, we all realized we had the same experience.
That's awesome. You know, what's funny about now, I have to ask you this because I'm sure there's other people who I already know the answer. I think, but. Do you know, can you tell me why, not why, but now let me ask you this. Until you guys started all talking about it, how did that conversation begin? Do you remember? Did you go up to someone and say, hey, have you ever heard of or anything like that?
No. I think what happened was for me, this is, I can't speak for everyone else, but I can just say that I came down the stairs and I said to who I was working with. I'm like, oh my God, someone just said my name upstairs. I don't know who it was. I thought, like, it's all clear.
Uh-huh.
Or like, oh, I thought it was all clear. Why did someone say my name? Whatever. But I mean, mm-hmm. we all have name tags, so we're pretty much, like, you can see who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, what? She's like, oh, where did it happen? I said, just right up the stairs that way. She goes, oh, I've had that happen to me, too. I was like, oh, really? And she told me what happened to her, too. And I was like, okay, cool. And then we were talking about it as we were closing everything up. And then as we came down the stairs, someone's like, oh, what are we talking about? And then I told her what happened to me. And then they said, oh, this happened to me, too. And it just became like a common conversation.
That's awesome.
And you're just like,
yeah.
What is happening?
You know what I think often happens
it's all the same but different.
Yeah, you know what I think is awesome and why I think that happens is I think people encounter things, but they
mm-hmm.
almost don't want to say it out loud to anyone else because they don't think one that someone's going to believe them.
Don't really believe it.
Especially like if you're in a place that you're new and you don't want to like give people the vibe like, oh, I'm new, I don't want them to think I'm strange, but when you do share and they're like, oh, well, actually, yes, this is what happened, then you feel validated that I'm not the only one and I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Or you feel like you didn't imagine it because sometimes I've come off from set and I'm like, did I just imagine that someone did that or was it all in my head or did it really happen?
Now, do you guys often share swap stories or is it so common now that you're like, oh, it's just a ghost again? Oh,
I mean,
just this one and that
one. It's a little bit of both. Like, I mean, it's funny because sometimes I know this is terrible, but it's kind of like hazing, I guess you can do. When we have new people join the team, we all tell our ghost stories randomly throughout the training. So, for example, if I'm training someone in the elevators, One of the other ones from previous years comes in and says her ghost story about like the love and the lady, and then I say mine. But like it all happens like time. It's just like hazing, really. We all talk about it at random time just to like see how if they can handle it, see if they're curious, see if they're not happy about it, and we just say, yeah, no, it's all true, but don't worry, they're all fine.
Then how does that ever backfire where someone's like, yeah, I'm out of this job, I'm not staying here?
I don't think I've ever seen anyone ever quit, but they really never did the elevator again.
You know, what's funny about that is I actually am very much aware of people who do that. It's certain places where they know it's like haunted. But here's the difference.
Yeah.
They won't tell them anything about whatever it is. They'll just send them a place where they know they're guaranteed to have an encounter. And unfortunately... Like, I remember I worked for a movie theater for a certain amount of time, and I had to fill in for somebody at another theater. And oddly enough, one of the theaters I had to fill in with was in Boston, of all places. And when I was, in that area, they had sent me to, one of these areas thinking that they were going to get me with, some spooky thing. Little they know, it didn't take long. I mean, I didn't have to go all the way where they needed me to go to know that there was something there, because as soon as I got there, I knew it was there. But I'm not going to tell them that, you know what I mean? Because for me, it's not so much...
Really a game. Just have some fun with it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely will. And you know what I do? I usually, with those people, for example, I said, why, was I supposed to encounter something? What was I supposed to encounter? You know, I'll play dumb, you know what I mean? Even though, like, whatever it is that you're trying to send me to is literally, you're kidding, And that, or, my other favorite, well, actually, that one was even better because what they thought when it was going to scare me, I did have fun with them because it kind of backfired on them because where they all have, had the experience or whatever, I took it one step further because of that, when I first got there, because I was there for about a week. So one step further than just going along with them, what I did was I sat there and talked to them for quite, what they were trying to get me to find. I actually came back and said, well, yeah, of course I see you. This is, and I gave them the whole history of everything that went on and everything else. I gave them the description all the way down to a T. And you should have saw the look on their faces.
They're just like, okay.
Kind of like the mic drop kind of a thing. Like they were trying to rib me. In wrestling, we call it ribbing when you play a trick on someone. We call it ribbing.
Yeah.
And so, or, joke
taking
around.
Taking the mic in England.
In Ireland, they call it cracking, having a good crack. That's what my grandmother used
having
to call
a
crack, it, cracking
yeah,
on each
too.
Other.
I've heard that one too, yeah.
But, yeah, so it's interesting, the different, you know, things. But, yeah, it didn't work on me, but it backfired on them because what they wanted to do is scare me. But instead what I did is I introduced...
It'll take a lot more.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. When it comes to that stuff, I don't have a lot of fear with that stuff because... I mean, what's it going to do? What's the word? I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. Not all of them are appealing to talk to or see or anything like that. But it's not like they're going
they
to hurt
to.
Me. Yeah, sometimes they don't
yeah,
want
exactly.
to. And that's okay. And I give them the respect. I don't bother them. They don't bother me. And when they do, it's like,
exactly.
oh, here we go.
Exactly.
You know, I often have said that, you know, unless they are willingly trying to get someone's attention for some apparent reason, then they're not going to bother you. And it's usually,
exactly.
you know, people who have like a slight story about something and then they embellish it and it sounds worse than it is.
Yeah,
and things
exactly.
like that. You know, my wife and I, we're, you know, ever since that time at the Omni, now we're planning on staying at the Lizzie Borden house. It was one of her other ambitions. She wants to stay at the Lizzie Borden house.
Lizzie Borden house or you want to?
Well, I have toured it. I haven't. It's a bed and breakfast now. I don't know if you knew that. The Lizzie Borden house is a bed and breakfast.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's a fun little thing. So Lizzie Borden house is actually now a bed and breakfast. And I'm going
to
be honest with you, it's one of the most morbid
Google
things
it.
You could ever hear. Oh, yeah, it's there. It's not cheap. But... you know, we were
oh
talking about
God.
Doing it for our anniversary.
You're right. Not that I didn't believe you, but you're right.
I know. But what's interesting about it, you know, it's funny. Like a lot of places have that kind of a gimmick thing. Like something happened here and people
yeah,
will,
of course.
You know,
what,
turn
it. Lizzie Borden's house. Like that would be a great tourist thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's a tour. They do a tour, but then they have the bed and breakfast where you can
yeah,
actually
so.
Stay there. And, you know, that's one of the things where
that's
on
crazy.
Our bucket list. Maybe for our anniversary, since we got married in October. So
yeah,
you know,
do
that's
it.
What.
Don't do it. I would go.
Oh, we plan on it eventually. But,
eventually,
yeah, we
cool. I'm looking at it.
Well,
I'm looking at the website,
expensive.
And I'm like, okay.
I know, right? It's up there, and then the different packages you can get. If you look where you can stay, it's like really. So it's fun.
It's crazy.
The Omni Hotel, actually, I'm going to be honest with you. The Omni Hotel it can be cheaper if you look on. You can actually book that pretty cheap if you look on like one of those travel websites.
Yeah,
you know, Travelocity or whatever. You can actually get good rates if you ever want to go there. But I always find it's cheaper. It's easier to go from afar, so you don't have to actually stay
exactly,
there as long
yeah.
as you want to.
I mean, in all honesty, like I'm nowhere near ready to travel just yet. I'm still a little bit iffy about things in the world.
Oh, I don't blame you.
But it's
yeah,
definitely,
I don't blame
definitely
you at all.
On my list.
Oh, I completely
yeah.
understand that. And you know, speaking of which, being in Toronto, you're in Canada, the other side
mm-hmm.
of the border, so to speak. Here.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, a lot of people, I work with a lot of people on various different things, and some people I work with on either my shows or whatever else, they have filmed up there in Canada. They have both issues
yeah.
coming to and from. Is that still a thing going on up there? Like, there people still having a like, are people still quarantined up there when they get there?
No, not anymore. Not anymore.
It's getting
now
more lax.
I would say that. Like, you don't have to quarantine. You just take a test, and then
mm-hmm.
if you do test positive, I think you have to go into isolation only if you feel, like, worse.
Okay.
So.
But as far as you know,
movie
people
set,
can still...
But, like, movie set-wise, they've now gone from being tested before you set on the set to now being tested the second you arrive.
Okay.
So instead of taking one before, instead of taking one like 24 hours before, it's mm-hmm. now I'll get there at like, I don't know, 2 o'clock or something, and
mm-hmm.
they'll take it immediately. And then if I get positive, I obviously go home. And if I'm negative, then I can stay.
Okay.
So they've kind of relaxed. It's not as extensive as doing it 24 hours before, you know?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons, one of the questions I had, because I know I have people who worked on films up there or TV shows, and they had issues getting to and from or would tick forever. Some people I feel really bad for, like, as far as that stuff goes, like, making films right now must be difficult as far as getting places. And,
I mean, it is,
but you know,
like,
you get used to it after a while.
We're opening up a little bit. It's a little easier.
Yeah. At least in Canada and here in the States, everything's opening up again as well, which is interesting. But, like, for example, I know actually there's a Canadian-based actor who keeps going over to New Zealand, and he seems to always get stuck over there whenever he goes over there. And he films over there for, like months on end because he can't even leave the hotel in New Zealand for a week or thing or a month.
Well, New Zealand has always been like that. They've been really on the whole quarantining, stay away from people. They had, like, one case through the entire time, and we had, like, millions.
Right. No, I mean, they obviously know what they're doing because they had a very, you know, very limited amount of problems over New Zealand. But I do know I feel bad because the person's like, you know, a young person. Try to keep a young person in a hotel in a room for one pair at a time. I would be pulling my hair out of my head. I can't even sit in my own house long periods of time,
exactly.
Let alone
it would be hard.
In a hotel.
It would be hard.
Yeah, but you know what, though, in the industry, when you're working in film, I guess you get used to that kind of thing. I'm like, oh, this poor dude. And then he just had to go back there to work on some more scenes or whatever.
God.
So he's stuck there again. I'm like, oh, you poor dude. But it's fun. It's cool. I mean, I'm sure they enjoy it. Yeah, yeah. Now let me ask you this, because you work in a, you know, the studio there where you make films and stuff like that. Have you had people who are well-known who have come to tell you these stories? And do you have any of those stories that you've heard?
Say it again. You kind of broke up a little bit for me.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
There you go.
Okay, cool. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. My headphone likes to do some things sometimes. What I was wondering is, have you ever had to deal with, like, people outside, like, other, like, people who work on set, like actors or whatever, coming to you guys and telling you these stories? And you're like, oh, that's just so-and-so? Or is it just like a thing in between?
Yeah, they do a few times. I've had a couple of people come up to me and just say, like, wow. They're like, I feel like there's somebody near. I feel like there's somebody around me. I was like, what do you mean? She goes, I just don't know. I just feel like this. Someone around me. I was like, it could be one of the three people who's here. What else? I mean, a lot of times people from set, like the people behind the scenes, they come up to us, the attendants, they ask, and they're like, so is this place haunted? And you're like, yeah, a little bit. And she goes, how much is a little bit? You tell the story.
And then
she goes, yeah, just a little bit. So we tell her the story. She goes, yeah, we experienced that. We're like, okay, cool. So
awesome. That's kind of funny.
It's always been fun. It's always fun when people say, whenever someone asks you, is it haunted? You immediately know they're going to ask you the stories of it because they want to check something out.
Yeah. You know, it's not like, you know, they're just saying just for the heck of it, but they're wanting to know because they either had an experience and they don't want to say, hey, listen, this thing just happened. Or they heard about something and they want to, like me, for example, I didn't stay in the Omni Hotel. I hadn't heard about it. And then my wife didn't know. So that's why I had to ask them, this is the Omni Hotel and this is the same thing where
the same one, right?
1408 is based on, right? And she goes, oh, yeah, it is. And then that's when she gave me the big sheet. All the things on it. It was a lot of fun.
We do a lot of open houses, so we always have to ask questions like that. Like, once you start talking about it, they kind of gather around you and they want to hear more. So, and then you get that from anyone, any single one of the people that have worked there for more than maybe 3 years, I would say, they all have a story.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, how often do you guys get new people that don't know anything about the history or whatever that are like, hey, let me surprise you with this story? And have you guys any stories that have thrown you guys for a loop, like you haven't even heard it yourself or had that experience?
I had one that my manager told me about, and it scared the life out of me because I was like, no, I don't like this kind of thing that happens. But basically, she was doing the run through where we turn off all the lights.
Yeah.
And as she's turning off all the lights, she turned them all off, but they all went back on again. And she's like, "Oh, there must be something wrong." So she's just like flick, flick, flick. And then she heard someone say, Lori, Lori, like her name. And she went to see who it was, and there was literally no one around in the entire building, but she could hear someone calling her. And I was like, I don't, they just don't mess, don't call me, okay?
Don't call me.
That's where I draw the line. When you call me by my name, I'm like, no, don't do it.
Now, the ghost.
What else? I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm listening.
No, I was just going to say that you asked about people who don't know the history of the building. It's fairly hidden. It's fairly like a hidden gem.
Yep.
In Toronto, for me, I feel like because it's so hidden that a lot of people forget that there's two theatres first and foremost, but also that it was opened in 1913.
Mm-hmm.
So when people who don't know the history, you start telling them the history, and then included in the history is the Lavender Lady anyways. So that's when it all starts the conversation of them being like, oh, I had no idea that this was even a thing. So, yeah.
That's interesting. That's a really cool thing, though. It's always interesting when you hear more of those things, you know. And I'm the kind of person that I always kind of go wherever I'm told where the supposed haunted places are. I'm drawn to those places just because for myself, because for every place that's supposedly haunted, there's those stories that are haunted that it turns out not to be the case. And I've had that happen, too. And for myself, I have a firm belief if I don't see it, I can't believe it kind of a thing, which is why I absolutely believe in ghosts. I'm not saying I don't believe in ghosts at all. I very much know ghosts are real. I know there are spirits and things like that. That I can confirm. As far as every single story being, you know, accurate, I can't say that because for example, Castle Islands, I spent a lot of time there as a younger kid inside the Fort Independence, and there's really nothing ever happened over there. Across the river, across the ocean there, though, not ocean, but across the little bay in that fort, yeah, absolutely, the woman in black, and she'll usually come finding me when I'm there, if I ever go there.
Of course, yeah.
But, like, as far as other places, like, for example, the right down the street from my house now, where we just moved, is the famed Slater Mill, and this is on the top 10 list of the most haunted areas of all of Rhode Island. And I'm not going to lie to you, I was a little disappointed when I got there.
it's not really haunted.
I have not had any experiences at the Slater Mill at all, outside of the amazing people who work there, and outside of me showing up abruptly during a film screening and a history thing and winning a caption contest that just happened to be there. Just the things you find, I go for a nightly walk and I happen to go down there and they had this, you know, they had a film screening down there and they had a little table where they had captions and, you know, one of those caption contests. And being a writer and being creative, you can't challenge me to something and not expect me to take it up on it. So of course I'm going to try. And I ended up winning. I wasn't planning on even going down there. I'm just drawn down there. It's a very pretty area. Like the area itself is very pretty. It's like the river's there and like the waterfall's there. And it's very picturesque, the Slater Mill. It's very pretty and they do a great job upkeeping and stuff like that. But unfortunately, I've never had any paranormal experiences and apparently all of them, and everyone else has. I have not. But
That's actually interesting.
I know, right? I've had other places. Are you just looking up it now?
Because
it is well-known.
I'm still interested by it because, like, I don't know if maybe it's just, like, there's something that you couldn't sense, or maybe it was more along the lines of it was drawn to other people or other people were just making up for tourism.
Well, here's the problem with that. If it is, most times, if it's haunted or not, I'll know right away because whatever presence is in that location will automatically come find me because they know I know that they're there. So if it is haunted, I would know automatically, especially where, you know, a lot of the stories you hear about the Slater Mill are, you know, all these young people who, you know, you can hear people, you know, chanting and calling and these things like that because the Slater Mill, historically speaking, is in our country, you know, was the beginning of the Industrial Revolution here. And it was the very first successful water mill made in America. Was down here down the street,
okay.
And they employed children mostly to work on the in the factory because they could only, because they had to work the gears and stuff. They needed small people to use that. So the guy who built it, Slater, hired a bunch of children, and he would have their families live in the area. So a lot of kids worked in the factory. So the stories are that all these kids had, people could hear kids calling and crying and all these other things. And I can tell you this for now. For facts, anytime there's ever been a paranormal thing where there's kids nearby, they are usually drawn to me first and then everybody around there, probably because they know that, I'm a father and because I'm more sensitive to things in general. And the fact that there's supposedly so many of them, there's no way that all of them or half of them haven't made them known to me. That's kind of that, but I'm not saying that all of Rhode Island isn't like that. I haven't been to the Conjuring House. That's just south of where I am. But I'm also not crazy either. I'm not that bad off that I'm willing to go all the way to the Conjuring House. But
I know maybe one day eventually.
I'm not gonna lie to you. Whenever I found out that the Warren Museum was actually a thing. And whatnot, and when I found out that I could have gone and seen this for myself, I was actually really bummed because I didn't even know until much later in life that it even existed.
Right.
You've heard of the Warren Museum, of course.
Pardon me, say it again.
You've heard of the Warren Museum, correct?
Yeah.
The Museum of...
I know of it. I don't...
Probably the two most famous ghost hunters or paranormal investigators in the world are Ed and Lorraine Warren. And what bums me out is their house is in New England. It's in Connecticut. I didn't learn about that until much later in life. And fortunately,
make a trip to go there?
Well, I can go to the house. The problem is they moved the museum. They had a museum. It was a real thing. And you could go legitimately.
Oh, you missed out the entire museum.
Yeah, because they had to close the museum because of zoning issues. Because it was literally in the basement of the Warren's house was where the Warren Museum was. And in that museum, you would find all of the artifacts from all of their various different, tales and their different investigations, including the famous Annabelle doll was in their basement and all those things. I'm sure everyone's heard of Annabelle.
Stupid Annabelle doll. I did not like that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, all of those movies. Those are all interesting movies.
The Conjuring 2 was set in Enfield, which is right where my nan used to live.
Mm-hmm. Now, out of curiosity, did you hear those stories growing up there? Like, for example, the Enfield Ghost is a very well-known Warren story. Did you hear about that prior to?
Yeah, I heard people like talk about it like randomly. At certain points, mm-hmm. but I never really thought about it until I saw the movie and I was like, okay, mm-hmm. is this real? And then mm-hmm. went down and then I passed the road and I passed the exact same road. I was like, oh my God, this is a real road. Is the story real? And then I just sort of asked like my nan. And I think she said that she remembers the story, but we don't talk about it.
Really?
So I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to, England's like the Church of England, really, isn't it? So
yeah,
it's all considered like devil-ish, I guess. Like a devil, right?
Yeah, I
so
get how that
says,
works.
I know of it, I just don't talk about it.
Yeah,
so that's
I know
the only
how
idea.
Works.
And then I watched the movie and then I did the research and I was like, oh, okay, well, went straight past Angel Road and I was like, okay, that's not fun.
Yeah, it's fun how that works, and that's true. And, it's interesting in a lot of those places.
And now I'm like, okay.
Now, that's over there in England, so is that whenever you visit home or whatever you go there, or how often do you get to go over to the UK?
I haven't been in a while. I'm hoping to go back soon, maybe. I don't know.
You want to be smart, too. I get that.
Yeah, I mean, it's also that, too, but the last time I went back, it was 2018, and yeah, that was the last time I was back there.
So it was fairly recent, so you still could get those rides off it.
I came back July 2019, went back to work, and then 7 months later, the world shut down.
Yeah, right.
So I'm
right,
stuck
right.
Here.
The world, exactly. Exactly, I know how that works. A lot of people are in that same boat. It's interesting how the different areas, the different stories and all that stuff. And you talk about people like them who have been all over the world, who've experienced these things. But when I found out that they had a museum and I could have gone, I was bummed out.
Of course, I would be bummed out too if you find that out later in life.
Because where usually people like are afraid to go places and they say, hey, this is such a thing. I usually am drawn to that kind of thing. Part of it is because I want to find out how, you know, because I need to see it to believe it, you know what I mean? And for the most part, I will know. And there are a lot of, what's funny is when you encounter things that you never hear about places being haunted and you experience things in places you don't even think about, but yet, you know, because no one else has mentioned it or whatever, you keep those tails under your hat, so to speak.
Exactly, because you kind of wonder
thing.
And you don't want to.
Yeah. But you know what else is interesting? Here's a fun, here's a story about one of my early, this is one of the early days when I realized I was clairvoyant. And this is fun.
Okay.
This is a true story now, so fair warning. This is exactly how it went, and it's a fun one. So I had just left my step family and I lived with my actual family. I took a room from my cousin who lived in my grandmother's old house. And that was the house where I grew up with, in my grandmother's house. When my mother was young, because my mother had me young, we stayed with my grandmother. Well, her mother, my grandmother. And again, she was Irish, so anyway. But my grandmother was someone who was very much someone who was protective of me and very wise woman, very had a lot of kinds of things. And, you know, she was also a tough Irish woman you don't want to ever cross either, my grandmother. But because I don't know the history much of the whole family, so to speak, because of all the secrets and, you know, deception and everything else in my family.
All that stuff,
I don't know everything, but here's what I do know. I stay with my cousin who I – traditionally, growing up, I didn't get along with, but because I needed something in the meantime, I stayed with her. This is before I went out on my own. In one of the rooms I stayed in, I didn't know anything about it, but I was staying in the room, and late at night, I was in the room, doors shut, because obviously I want my privacy, whatever, and keep away from my cousins or whatever.
Exactly.
It was late at night. It was probably maybe about 2:30 in the morning because I have insomnia. I have a hard time sleeping anyway. And I was working on writing and doing a couple other things. And I do write. I get more creative at night anyway. And it's quiet and peaceful. And I get done writing, you know, something cool and stuff like that. And I just got done doing that when I went to lay down and all of a sudden this guy came into the room, and it was an apparition.
Okay.
It was a ghost. I didn't know who the heck it was. But when he came into the room, this is fun. And this is also interesting. I didn't know who this guy was because I never seen him before. At least I didn't think I knew who he was. I didn't recognize him. He came into the room and, you know, kind of came off as, I don't feel comfortable with this guy at all. And did I feel uncomfortable, and did I feel like this isn't going to be good? This guy's not, I don't like this guy at all. And I was probably I was probably 13 or 14 maybe. So I was, a teenager. But, and I didn't have a lot of anything like that. Normally I don't have any fear of these things anyway, because normally I can get a vibe if I should worry or not. But this guy,
You still got to, based on how you feel, right? If you don't feel comfortable, then you don't feel comfortable.
Yeah, I didn't like the look of this guy, and he was coming right at me. And next thing I know, my grandmother, who has been gone since I was 13, she came. No sooner did I say that, she came between the two of us, and he left.
Oh, my gosh.
That happened 5 times in that room. He would come, and my grandmother would chase him off. And she would tell me, because, again, I could talk to them. Don't talk to him. She would tell him, get the bloody hell away from the boy, in her Irish accent. And
he would leave.
I don't know who this guy was. So I asked my aunt, who lived upstairs, who was my grandmother's daughter, because now I have to ask them, because I didn't tell anybody yet, because, again, I don't get along with my cousin anyway. I'm not going to tell her this is what's going on. I asked my cousin's mother, though, my Aunt Barbara, who lived upstairs. I asked her, said, out of curiosity, because you grew up in this house before I did. And remember, I grew up in that house as a kid, and upstairs where my aunt lived now, at that point, was where I stayed with my grandmother. And my cousin lived on the first floor, which is where I was. Well, I told my aunt the story and what happened, and she told me that was my Uncle Danny's room. And
oh
she
gosh.
Told me the story of my Uncle Danny. Danny is
okay.
a family relative who there's a lot of mystery around him, too. But moral of the story is Uncle Danny is known for having some type of issue, and a lot of that is, again, history and missing. But he ended up taking his life at Faxon Park, which is not far away from where I lived. And it turns out from stories from my aunt and my mother, when I asked her about my Uncle Danny, because my mother was alive at that point, and I would ask her who Uncle Danny was or whatever, and that's when, you know, a lot of people would tell me stories of him. He was not a nice man at all. So the fact of the matter was, I described this guy to T. I'd never seen him before, remember. I never knew his name or anything like that. I just saw him come
and I described him.
And my Aunt Barbara went white when I told her these stories. When I told her about the guy I saw, when I told her about all that, she went absolutely white because she knows that he was gone before I was even born. I wasn't even around, and that was his room, apparently. And remember, my grandmother owned the house.
That's crazy.
So, you know, a lot of people believe that, you know, once they leave. But here's the true story, that wherever you go, there's usually at least five
they
people
hold.
Around every living person. And most people have people who are around them a lot. My grandmother's one of those people who are around me a lot, even to this day. My mother is another one of those people now. I have another aunt who also likes to surround me here and there. These are positive people, and I have other people once in a blue moon too. But as it turns out, that was one of those residual things, and he was not a positive person, apparently, so, which is why my grandmother
That's
would often chase him away. And my aunt, when I told her about, you know, this guy coming in and who is this guy, I described him. She goes, "That's your Uncle Danny. How would you even know who that is?" I said, "I don't know who he is."
God.
And that's when I found out, and then my mother and other people told me the story. He hung himself at Faxon Park, which is why he looked not so pleasant either. So, needless to say,
that's insane. I mean, that's pretty cool, but that's pretty insane.
Yeah, and this is the part about the whole clairvoyancy thing, and a lot of people think, "Oh, it's fun to be that." I said, "Oh yeah, it's real fun until you have to encounter this, and you don't have a control over that." And what if my grandmother wasn't someone who surrounded me? What if she wasn't something that could do that?
Exactly.
And I'll be honest with you, I've never been attacked by anything. Nothing's ever attacked me, but I can definitely tell when something's nice and when something's not. Or when someone, I don't call them something. There were a someone at one point. And, you know, it's one of those things. I do have a book I recommend, and it's going to sound interesting from whom it wrote it, because the person who wrote it is a pretty well-known author, Stephen King. It's one of his newest books. It's called Later. Have you read it?
No, I have not.
I recommend anyone to read this book because what this basically, you're familiar with M. Night Shyamalan's movie, The Sixth Sense?
Of course, yes.
By the way, my second favorite movie of all time.
It's a good movie.
I often wonder, I love the movie because of the whole movie thing. Because for me, I'm a movie junkie first. I love movies. And because I thought it was masterfully done, I was sad of the fact that I can relate to it But I didn't really, you know, that's just part of it. But for the fact that masterfully made, that's why it's my favorite movie, not because I can relate to the character. Stephen King wrote a book.
It's funny because, like, The Sixth Sense is, I've watched it maybe once or twice, because obviously you can't watch it more than that. But I do remember not figuring out the ending, and I'm getting mad when it finally happened.
Right.
Because I didn't figure it out.
I love, you know, that is a movie that you can only watch probably once or twice. It's not because it's not a great movie. It's just because once you see it, I do think you should see it more than once, just because the more you see it, the more things you could pick up along the way. And
I know,
that
but I was just so mad that I didn't get it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, me too. Because I'll tell you, I'm usually pretty good about figuring out movies, and sometimes if I figure out a movie's plot and how it's going to end within 5 minutes of the movie, sometimes it takes me out of the whole movie. Also, on top of it, it's not a good movie. If it's not a good movie, I already lose. Now, there's different criteria of what makes a good movie, in my opinion. Cast, location, believability, storylines, and so forth. I've talked about that on the show before, how I've, you know, movies. I can relate to the character, too, but that's the way down the bottom field. But this book that he wrote, Stephen King, which I actually, you know, would probably say is a lot like The Sixth Sense, but except for, I mean, they even reference The Sixth Sense in the book, which is interesting because the character is a young man. It's told third party. He's narrating the book, the young man. I'm not going to, you know, spoil all of it, but the premise of the book is that he's a young man. He's now a middle-aged man who has grew up being clairvoyant, who is someone who is able to communicate and see the ghosts and the dead, so to speak. And I recommend people read that book because that's kind of what clairvoyance really is. That's kind of really what it is. That's kind of how
exactly
that's kind of what
the description
you don't. So I really do think that's the closest representation for what goes on with that, more so than any other thing I've seen yet. Sixth Sense is close to it because it's not something you can turn on and off. It's just you sometimes pay more attention than you need to. Like sometimes,
exactly.
I mean, it is up to the person individually how much, you know, they give into it, how much they want to communicate, how much they want to pay attention versus everything else. Because obviously, I speak English. I can't communicate with people who, you know, entities that don't speak English. I don't mean to be a jerk,
exactly.
But
I
can't understand, and I think they know that because they don't, you know, people, the things that are not, generally the people, the entities that don't speak English generally don't talk to me for the most part. Doesn't mean I don't see them, but I often don't, you know, they don't communicate with me. What's the point? I can't understand you. I think they know that.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
That people, you know, all that. But, you know, it's a very interesting thing, you know, the whole, you know, fact and fiction type of thing.
I mean, it is. It's all like because a lot of people have different opinions about it, but also sometimes the collectiveness, the people who have a collective opinion about it, pretty much it's they all respect each other's opinions for it.
Oh, that's the
it's like
anyway.
You don't deny that, you don't belittle any, right?
Of course not. No, I mean, I think everyone is entitled to their own belief. Everyone's entitled to their own thoughts. I don't shoot down someone who say they could do things because I absolutely believe. I mean, I don't believe in something unless I see it for myself. If I don't see it, I can't. Do I believe in UFOs? Not so much. I haven't seen a lot of UFOs. I haven't seen any aliens. I've seen plenty of ghosts. But do I respect people who say they do? Yeah, that's their thing. Who am I
to
say that they didn't have that happen, you know? My wife tells, you know, stories here and there about that stuff, and who am I, you know? I can talk about the
spirit thing
and being clairvoyant all day because I've encountered that, and it's not something you can turn off and on. But it is something you can take control of and how much, you know, you don't have to talk to the people, you know?
Yeah.
What's that? But it's a very different thing.
It's just to, like, to at least acknowledge it.
Yeah, I mean, I often do acknowledge, you know, I know they're there, and I'll acknowledge the fact that I know they're there. Yeah, I do recommend that book. I do recommend, and a lot of people don't like Stephen King because he's very wordy in his description. And I like to, tell people a lot, and I know everyone, to each their own, you know, not everyone likes Stephen King, not everyone likes other writers either, you know. Some people like Twilight and some people like Harry Potter. It doesn't make either one better
exactly.
than the other. It's just someone's opinion. I personally, you know, I like Stephen King's writing because, you know, he's a New England guy, first of all. But second of all, because, I mean, the more I learn about how his process is, and also he's been helpful to me because, I mean, I'm doing a couple of those baby bought. Have you heard of the Dollar Baby projects, by the way?
The Dollar Baby Project? No.
Have you heard of those? Well, I know you say you're into film and stuff like that. That's why I brought it up to you, because if you go on to the Stephen King website.
Okay, I'm going to do it now.
So I'm just going to give you give you a quick little synopsis. The Dollar Baby Project is basically Stephen King doesn't really need a lot of money, and Stephen King has made plenty. But what he wants to do is help future filmmakers or people want to get their foot in the door. I haven't made a film in a little while. It's been a few years. And so I myself am doing this. And what you do is give him a dollar. You're probably reading it now. There's a list of his short stories that have not been made into film yet. And basically what you do is you pick those stories and you send him a dollar, $1. And for that dollar, you own the rights to that film. Of course, there's criteria. You have to, you know, present it to him. You share it with him. You give him special credit or whatever. But he'll actually, not only will he give you the permission to use that short story, but he will also eventually, you know, a lot of it, you know, they say after you sign up for it, he will actually help you promote and produce and stuff like that after, if he likes it enough. And originally I had one of those short stories I had the rights to. I still have it. I actually then had a better idea. Rather than try to take that short story that was literally 4 pages long, which for Stephen King to write a 4-page short story seems ridiculous, because most people who know Stephen King know him writing 4 pages describing a thing versus a whole story.
Yeah.
And I had to make a full-length film out of that 4-page short story. So a lot of people, you know, being someone who can adapt, because that's kind of what that is, being a screenwriter,
is to
adapt that short story into film. And so what I decided to do is I actually took some of those, and I'm actually doing what's called an anthology series rather than the original thing, because I was actually able to kind of weed through, and I would say, actually, if I have this, and this, now you have an anthology, just changing a few things here and there. So just as a fellow filmmaker and someone who likes film, I thought I'd pass that along to you.
I had no idea about that. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I think it's helpful, and I think it's something that everyone can look into. But Stephen King is someone who, he writes similar to me. I didn't know that until I got older and I did research on Stephen King. He listens to music like I do when I write, and various other different similarities. He was actually the one who gave me the tip on how to write my autobiography, which is taking some time, but I'll get there. But he was able to give me the tip on how to do that. Oh, it sure does. But, you know, prior to that, I didn't, you know, I obviously know my own story, but he was actually the one to help me kind of figure out how to put it to paper and stuff. So he's been helpful in that sense. But when he wrote, when I read this book later, now this difference of opinion, again, you kind of have to like some Stephen King, but I really like this book. It's the first like book in a long while I've read, and it's really good in my opinion. My wife has a difference of opinion on it because she's not into whole Stephen King. She read it.
Either you are or you aren't.
Yeah, some people, not everyone is a Stephen King fan, and I get that. But as far as the subject matter we're talking about today, as far as, you know, talking with ghosts,
spirits,
things like that, I think it's a very relatable article of literature, and I think it's really, really good to kind of compare notes. Sixth Sense, but I think the book later is really tells the whole story about what it's really like versus what everyone thinks it is.
I mean, I was thinking, as I'm talking to you, Maybe, yep. Do you remember Keita from the live?
I do.
Yeah, she is a very, very good sidekick. Maybe she can have a you can have this conversation with her, I was thinking. Because she's also clairvoyant. Like, she's always helping people.
Well, I haven't talked to any. You know what? I feel really bad. I haven't been part of those lives in a very long time. I've been busy
a lot, and he
knows that. But also, I feel bad because whenever I see, like, the lives are up, I'm usually out and about, and I want to give the respect of everyone, so I want to make sure I pay attention and all. And lately, I've been traveling and working, and now I'm back working for, you know, over the creative over there in WWE. So that takes time on Fridays and the creative meetings and stuff.
Of course. Yeah, you're busy, mate.
And I'm also working for my friend's, you know, horror convention, which is just the perfect place for me to work in. But my friend's been really good. I'm very loyal to him, so, and I don't forget people, so. You know, and I actually, in a couple of weeks, I got to go to Oak, Pennsylvania, which I've never been to in my life, for the next Monster Mania, which is interesting because I get to see an old friend of mine, maybe heard of him, Robert England. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
I don't think so. It's not ringing a bell.
Yeah, Robert England is probably most famous for playing Freddy Krueger in the Nightmare on Elm Street series.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever seen... I don't know if you've ever seen The Nightmare on Elm Street, but it's probably best known for playing Freddy Krueger in The Nightmare on Elm Street originally. And also, you know, a lot of the other people from that show are going to be there. And also my other friend, Tyler Mayne, who was Rob Zombie's Michael Myers. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah,
he's also going to be there. He's a wicked nice guy. You've met Tyler Mayne?
Yeah, he came for the Halloween premiere at TIFF. In 2018, I think it was.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, he's really nice.
I'm friends with a lot of those people. They're all really cool people. James Jude Courtney.
He was really nice.
He
was really nice to us.
It's interesting how that works. Usually the scarier people who are in film are usually the nicer people in real life. Kind of like in wrestling.
I know.
Like the meanest bad guys are usually the nicest people off camera. And normally speaking, usually the nicer guys on camera are not so nice off camera. So it's interesting how that works.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, we've been talking for a little while and whatever, and it's been awesome. So I don't want to take too much of your thing, but I wanted to see if there's anything else you wanted to share or any more stories you had or anything, any other messages?
It's funny,
I
was trying to think of some more, but I haven't really, I think I gave you my good ones.
Yeah. No, okay, how about this? Since
if anything happens
all,
while I'm there on set next week, I'll let you know.
Oh, yes, definitely let us know. But also, since it's Halloween and all, what is your favorite horror movie? Do you watch horror movies?
Oh, I do.
What's your favorite horror movie?
I do like them. Like gory Halloween-y or just like thriller-ish?
Whatever you like. What is your favorite horror movie of all time? Since it's Halloween and all, what's the go-to Halloween movie for you? If you want to pick a movie that you want to watch.
Those are questions.
Are they? Okay, how about this? What is your favorite Halloween movie to watch? How about that? We'll watch two different questions.
Okay. I do like Hocus Pocus, but I do like Beetlejuice.
Classic.
Yes. I love
it. So what's your favorite film? Beetlejuice is a great movie. Do you do the Deo thing? Can you see me Deo?
Oh, yeah. I've also seen the Broadway play. It's something I want to see as well. Because the music
is
great. Beetlejuice, Broadway play is great.
Oh, I'd love to see that someday. I haven't been able to see it yet. I want to. I love Beetlejuice. Our family loves Beetlejuice. We also like Nightmare Before Christmas in this house. They love Nightmare Before Christmas.
I watch that every October 1st.
Awesome.
It kicks off my season.
Well, there you go. See that? You and my wife have something in common in my family in general.
Woo!
We were actually just listening to This Is Halloween just before I started doing this podcast because that's like the go-to song in the house.
I'm always singing it for the whole month of October. This is Halloween. I decorate something. It's like, this is Halloween. This is Halloween. Halloween.
And it was
Halloween.
Funny about, It comes back again in Christmas because my wife believes it's both a Christmas and a Halloween movie, so she likes it on both.
Nope,
so
I don't agree with that. It's not a Christmas movie. It's an actual Halloween movie.
It's a good Halloween movie. It is. She watches it on both. She uses it as both, considering Christmas is represented, so it's both in this house. That's okay.
Oh,
we also have Night Before Christmas.
Guess we'll let her have it.
We also have, there's other traditional things we watch too, but like we can't not have a holiday movie without having the Muppets Christmas Carol and whatever else. But,
we should have another conversation about Christmas movies.
We should. We should. Christmas movies are better than the actual holiday for me anyway. That's how I usually.
Yeah.
Those old. What do you call them? I always say it wrong. I always call them the Baskin Robbins. It's not the name of it though. But those old claymation movies we grew up with, I used to love those growing up. And
yeah,
I still watch them. And our kids watch them, which is even interesting. You know what? I think we're going to do that. We're going to have we're going to get back on Christmas. When it comes time for holidays and Christmas, we're going to do yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think we can probably do that. That sounds like a lot of fun. Do like a top 14 holiday Christmas movie type thing. I know I have my go-to.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Awesome.
We can figure a time out. December's a pretty busy month, but we can figure something out.
Sure we will. Of course we do. We always find time. Anyway,
exactly.
So for people know, where can people find you or what are you up to for projects, and give people a little rundown what's going on in the world of Muslana King, the Duchess, outside of beating everybody on her show?
Nothing. Just working. I guess there's nothing really interesting happening. I'm still trying to we've only just started, the film festival has only just started booming back here, so things are coming slowly. That's it, really.
Very cool.
It's been nice just to get back to normalness, quote-unquote, normal.
I do that too, the air quote thing. I literally just did the air quote thing, and you can't even see the air quote thing. I think
normal.
Everybody does that, though. Everyone does that.
It's the new
nobody
normal.
Nobody has to see it, yeah. It's been a pleasure having you on as always. And,
thank you.
You know, if people want to, what projects you're working on. Oh, you can't tell us what projects you're working on. But you know what? Good luck in your projects.
No, you can go on to my Instagram and my IMDb pages there, and that will probably have everything I'm working on.
Oh, tell everyone where those are then. How about that?
So
outside of
Instagram.
Me, I know where you are. Tell everyone else in the world.
Hey. Okay, on Instagram is at M-I-S-S Lana, L-A-N-A, King, and then that's my Instagram, I have everything there. I don't really use anything else, to be honest. I think that's the best way to find anything.
Awesome stuff. And I can tell you that Miss Lana is very, 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 very talented, and I think she's very accomplished in a lot of the things she does.
Thank you.
You speak very well. It's always a pleasure
that.
To have you. I dig the accent because I grew up with my grandmother and pretty much, and she has that Irish, she has a thick Irish brogue, which I give myself credit right now. I haven't slipped into it yet. I have a tendency to do that when I talk to people who have that Irish.
It's fine.
Tinge,
it's totally fine.
Sometimes the British one too. So that's cool. But it's been a pleasure having you. I know you got to get ready for your shows and stuff like that. And
I know.
Whatever else you got going on. But it's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. And good luck to your team next month for our team warfare tournament.
Oh.
you got quite the team assembled in your team warfare thing next month on our show.
Awesome.
But in general, have a great Halloween. And it has been a pleasure having you on, and may all your dreams come true, my friend.
Thank you.
Did you have any other things you wanted to say to your millions of loyal fans everywhere around the world?
No, I'm good. I'm getting a little bit shy now.
Oh, she's getting shy. Okay. Well, then what's your head?
All right, I'll talk to you
So you say hello to your ghost friends. Tell them I said hello.
I will tell them. I'll let them know that I spoke about him.
Awesome. Well, you have a great night and do whatever you got to do and may all your dreams come true. Have a great Halloween, my friend.
Thank you so much. Talk to you later.
Always. It was awesome having Lana on the show, and it was great hearing her experiences and so forth. And I think it's true that everyone has difference of opinions and everyone has different ways of doing things, and everyone has different experiences. My experiences aren't someone else's. And the story I told is true. That is one of my earliest memories of when it really became more apparent that I am drawn and these things are drawn to me. I don't view clairvoyance as a gift. I don't think that's a curse either. I think it's just part of my genetic makeup. I mentioned to Lana that when I did ask, you know, my aunts and stuff like that, they even confirmed that a lot of my grandmother and my her mother actually report having that kind of a connection to the spirit realm, the being drawn to things, feeling, seeing, and whatnot. And what I say is true. Around every single person, usually there's several people around them. I don't know who they are. I don't ask. And I don't do the whole reading thing. I don't tell people things. I don't make money off of it because I don't want anything from it. I don't, you know, guess at things. I don't do parlor tricks, anything like that, because that's not really what, you know, that is. And I often feel that when people start to, you know, take money for a gift that they have, or what they call a gift, I often, again, I don't see it as a gift. I just feel like it's a genetic thing. It's something you either have or you don't have. And I also can verify that I do believe in age it gets more profound and it gets, you know, earlier times. And just to give some more, you know, things that, you know, are different than for other people. When it comes to dreaming, people who dream, a lot of people, you know, you'd be surprised when you talk to people who talk about dreams. And if you were to think, how many dreams do you think you have? The true story and the reality is everyone has at least 100 dreams, they say, a night. And the truth be told, a lot of people can only remember a handful of them or even just one, if they remember dreaming at all. But what's interesting is, again, something I spoke about before my show, is normally when I have a, quote, when I have a regular dream, which I do have plenty of them, it's in color, vivid color, and, you know, I know it to be a dream and nothing more. However, I've learned in my time that when I have a dream that is in black and white, which also does happen on occasion, black and white dreams, as we call them in this house, are dreams that I have that most often than not, something from that dream will transpire and will happen. I don't believe me to be a psychic. I don't claim to be a fortune teller. But when I have a black and white dream, something is connected and I am, you know, I know things that I normally wouldn't. When I dream of black and white, something basically, whatever is in that black and white thing, something from that does usually happen. One of the most profound ones I've had, I was about 14 or I think it was about 15. Trying to do the math here. Yeah, I was about 15 or 16. Yeah, I had to be 16 because my best friend, Adam, my brother, one of the original F4Ls, he was 3 years younger than me. And one of the reasons why we were so connected is because we often called ourselves long-lost brothers, which is why the F4L began. And we became our own family because we understood each other. Often come from families who neither one of our families understood anything about us. They didn't have our compassion or anything else we had. But here's a story I think I've told once before, and I'll tell it now. try to keep it as brief as possible, too. So when I was about 16, I had a dream that there was a snowstorm. This is the dream I remember having. It was in black and white, which, again, as I mentioned, black and white dreams, something from that will come, you know, something will come of it. And one night I had a dream. It was in black and white, and it was a snowstorm. And I remember someone getting into a car accident and someone dying in that car accident. They hit a tree and it was and they were killed, and I saw them die. Very scary dream. Some people consider that to be a nightmare. Now, here's something else about my regular dreams in color. I can control those. I've learned to alter those dreams while I was sleeping. There was a dream study done back in the 80s on people like myself who claimed to be able to do that, and it's been proven to be a fact now that they call that there's a term for it, and I can't remember what it's called, but basically, I do remember, it's called lucid dreaming. Lucid dreaming is the being able to dream to a point where you realize you're dreaming and then being able to alter it while you're in a state of sleep. That is something I've been able to do with the dreams in color. Black and white, there's nothing I can do about those. That's why these are more prominent. So when I had a dream about this person who I didn't know who this person was, I saw them get in the car. It was a snowstorm, went into a tree, and they were killed. It was sad. Well, about 3 or 4 weeks later, I would meet this young man who would come into the group home where I was staying in, because, again, I was on my own at 15. And at 16, here's this young man who came in, and I talked to him, and we automatically, you know, had bonded. His name was Adam, as I mentioned. And one day we were talking, and we were talking about family, and I was talking to him about, you know, various different things. And come to find out, his father had died in a car accident. Now, here's the thing. When the car accident happened, the storm that I dreamt about, and again, I had this dream quite a while before Adam came in to this place. And Adam came maybe about 3 or 4 weeks later, and it was, in fact, a different month than when I dreamt. I had this dream probably a good while before I met Adam. Well, come to find out, there was a snowstorm on April 1st that year in my area, a snowstorm, a blizzard in April 1st. It was on what most people consider to be April Fool's Day. And again, I didn't think anything of the snowstorm. There was no significance, except for when I got to meet Adam a couple weeks after this, after a lot of that. As it turns out, my dream I had prior to meeting Adam was exactly what happened to his father. I dreamt of his father dying. I didn't meet Adam yet. Didn't know Adam from a hole in the wall. But what I dreamt was Adam's father passing away. Because he described the dream right down to a T. His father had left an area. He had hit some ice during the April 1st snowstorm. He hit a tree and was killed. Sad. Tragic. But from then on, we were connected, Adam and I, and he and I would form what is the F4L. He and I, along with others, would form what is now known as the F4L. So that's one of the earliest encounters of the black and white dreams, is the most vivid one and one of the most interesting coincidental ones that I've done. I've had encounters my entire life, and the fact of the matter is there's no such thing as someone being able to turn it on and off. There are people who have these podcasts, and there are people out there who claim to be clairvoyant. There are people out there who claim to be able to do all these things. But when they describe what they do and how they encounter and all these gimmicks, that's when I start to question things. As I mentioned, Alana, I don't doubt anyone who has some story, because to each their own. Everyone has something until it's the other one. You can't say what. But what is kind of cool is, well, not cool, but being able to see, feel, and know the facts of what goes on, knowing the truth behind it, it gives you a sense of knowing kind of when people are bending the truth, so to speak, or not knowing everything they can. So there is certain elements to people's stories when I have to start questioning validity of when they talk about things that are not present with actual clairvoyance, because I have, there's no on and off, like I said. And it is true, if I go into an area that is actually legitimately haunted, whatever is haunting that area will seek me out, because they know that, they do seem to know that I know that they're there. They do know that I can communicate with them. Do I always engage with them? No, because it's few and far between, right? Not everyone can I encounter. Not everyone do I want to associate with. Not everyone is as nice as others. Do I have a soft spot for some people? Yes. I'm not going to say I'm not going to say I ignore every single entity that comes to talk to me. I don't ignore everyone, everything. Because all honesty, I'm still me. I still care for people and things. I do still have a soft spot for other people. I have a soft spot for young people. And I've, you know, had to say goodbye to a lot of people in my lifetime. And do I see all of those people all the time? No, that's not how that works. You can't just call upon something, which is one of my most annoyances things in movies and whatever else. You can't just say, I want to talk to so-and-so, and then so-and-so will pop up. That's not how that works. Do spirits exist? Yes. Will they make their presence known? Absolutely. Do they try to talk to you? Yes. As I mentioned to Lana, it's if you choose to engage or not, and to what extent. I talk to everyone when I can. I have a soft spot for young people, like I said. I usually listen to young people who passed away. I feel that's the saddest things ever. I speak to other parents who have passed on about their own stories. Do I then go and reach out to other people? Not always, because I don't think that's right. I don't think it's good to, you know, share everything with everyone, because some people it's best not to know everything. So that's the honest truth of the fact and fiction prior clairvoyance. Do I see it as a blessing or a curse? I don't see it as either. It's just part of your genetic makeup. You either have it or you don't. Again, if someone takes money for this or someone is willingly putting that information out there, I do tend to not believe those people, because it's not, I don't go around saying that I'm 6 feet tall, I have a knee injury to everyone out there, because who cares if I have a knee injury? Why am I going to tell everyone I have a knee injury? Well, why am I going to tell everyone that I have clairvoyance? I have migraines. Do I tell everyone in the world I have migraines? No. Well, there's my 90-second mark. So ladies and gentlemen, I am the FRL icon, Sean Jazz Stevens. It's been a rough week, but this has been what I needed. So I hope everyone has enjoyed this episode. I hope to do another one before the end of the month. To everyone out there, maybe all your dreams come true. Have a happy Halloween. Thank you, Miss Lana King. May all your dreams come true. Peace, everyone, from the FRL headquarters, Sean Jazz Stevens.